at the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do. For the
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the world's greatest podcast where the actual two people doing the podcast actually have a rock fight.
Ah, we got a rock fight!
Today's podcast, we got Tennessee head coach Rick Barnes giving us a little bit of his formula on how to rebuild the Tennessee program, the success they've had. He talks about what it's like coaching a Grant Williams, coaching Admiral Schofield, and really kind of where they are in their program right now. And then let me tell you something, D squared. We got some interesting stuff going on. We got good games this weekend, first and foremost. I mean, we got North Carolina against Gonzaga. We got Kentucky. Can they bounce back? We got Kansas against Villanova in basically a sonic blockbuster. And then maybe when we could talk about some teams that are emerging, but let's get into the first one. Like, to me, I know we heard Roy Williams last week talk about, I'm doing the worst job I've ever done with my team. This is terrible. You know, we stink. And you know, they're playing against a Gonzaga team coming off a loss to a very physical and tough Tennessee team. You know, I started thinking about this. We're looking at this North Carolina team. Tell me if I'm right or wrong. All right, Luke May's points are down. His field goal percentage is down. Well, let's face it. Luke May last year played the five. He was matched up with a five. When they moved him around, when he caught it in a trail, when he caught it off a pick and pop, he had more space, better rhythm. The game was easier, and he was playing with an experienced team, an experienced point guard. And then when you look at their team in general, like, I'm really big. Like, every team's got to have a ball mover. Every team's got to have a guy that just says, you know what? If I get a shot, I get a shot. I'm going to defend. I'm going to be a ball mover. I'm going to attack when the opportunity presents itself, and I can really pass. And that's Theo Pinson last year for North Carolina. I don't think this team has a Theo Pinson on its roster where a guy that comes in, you know, like a guy that would just come in and say, you know what? I don't care if I get a shot. I don't care if I score. I'm going to lock that dude up. I'm going to make the right pass. I'm going to initiate the break. I'm going to make this simple play and the right play, and I'm not chasing anything. And when I look at this North Carolina team, they're pretty talented. They're playing bigger, which I think hurts May a little bit. But as good as Kobe White is, and he's a good young freshman, you know, to me, they don't have the guy, that blend guy. Am I way off on that?
No, Seth. I'm so in. What you're, I learned that as a junior going into my senior in high school. You got to have guys, man. You know, it's funny. One guy can so change the chemistry on the court and off the court of a basketball team. And I've always paid attention to it. And you bring up a guy that I think, I don't know, I mean, might have been perfect for North Carolina. And that is Theo Pinson. He guarded, he scored, he did whatever need, and he was a great personality and a veteran personality. Off the court, I think you are so right. I think that, and it's also one of the reasons why I think North Carolina at the end is going to be really good, because I do think that Roy Williams obviously is one of the great, in my opinion, he's one of the Mount Rushmore guys in coaching, but he'll get it figured out. And, you know, you mentioned White. We also must mention Little as talented freshman guys, the bigs. I believe by the end of the year, this team will have that figured out. But what they're going through right now, I think, is exactly what you said. Exactly where, hey, look, somebody, anybody, let's go, man. Let's, what's the right word? Let's be us more than me.
And
wouldn't you agree? Leaky
Black could be that guy. And he's the least heralded of their freshman class, but he's kind of a selfless guy, is really skilled. But I just think it's hard figuring that out. You know, you've got to replace Joel Berry. All right, Joel Berry could average 17 points a game, 3 assists. He, you know, 4-year starter. Kobe White's good, but like Kobe White right now at this moment in time, he doesn't understand when to go, when not to go. He's faster than fast, and he can score, but like he doesn't pick his spots yet when he needs to. And then the guy next to him, like Kenny Williams, is struggling because he doesn't have Theo Pinson to, like, bam, make the next pass. He gets open, jump,
right.
Bam. So, I mean, all that stuff takes time, and everyone wants it to happen right away. But is there going to be a guy? Like, every team's got to have a guy to say, you know what? I'm good. I'm going to do this because this is going to help us win.
And I agree.
Is that hard to find? It's hard to find that guy now.
Man, it's hard to find because you know what I've learned, and this goes to the NBA media too. Everybody wants to live the NBA lifestyle, right? Everybody sees this, and then how I get there. And I think guys, even coming into college, have become more like corporations with an objective, with a bottom line at the end, and that's the holy grail of the NBA. Seth, but I do think this. I think Roy Williams, there's certainly enough pieces. He's certainly a good enough coach. I'm looking forward. I'm going down there on the 29th to see them play Davidson. And, you know, Christmas is a good time.
Without me.
Yeah, without I tried.
Me. You got your guy, Benetti. I mean, which one?
I tried.
I know. I know. You're my guy.
But Man, I'm just curious. And I do think that I do think that this will get figured out. And I do think there's talent there. But I do think playing big does hurt Luke May. And I think that Roy kind of probably feels like, look, historically he's always been a throw-it-inside guy, run the floor, throw it inside at the end. And I think he kind of figures he's got to get these big guys going at some point. And if they do, then it's a bonus. If they don't, then you'll see Luke May at the five.
Exactly.
you know what I mean?
And on the other side, like Gonzaga, I think it's interesting. You know, look, they are really, really good. Let's be real, all right? No Geno Crandall. All of a sudden now, Josh Perkins got to play like 40 minutes a game. No Killian Tilly. Obviously, Rui Hachimura's got to play more minutes. But here's the thing I don't think normal people understand is you don't have those two guys in practice. You have nine guys in practice. So at a time of the year where, you know, once those finals are over, you have your team – you know, Mark Few, they just want to stay the same right now. They don't want to take a step back because they can't practice the way you normally would practice at this time of the year to take that next step forward where you've eliminated the distractions of school and you can get locked in. And, like, they're asking Josh Perkins now to play a ton of minutes. He's got to stay out of foul trouble. They don't have a backup point guard. So maybe he can't be as aggressive defensively. He can't be as aggressive offensively. You know, like the other night, he didn't score. He had nine assists. But I just think that when you're playing Hachimura that many minutes and you're playing Perkins that many minutes and you're not practicing, you know, as good as they are, I think it puts Mark in a tough position because you got to figure out how much you can push your guys right now in a time where normally you'd kind of be pushing their buttons a little bit.
Yeah. The one thing I never thought we would get into is overreacting to one loss in college basketball. You know what I mean? College football, I get it. I mean, we're in a position where one loss crushes you. But and this is what you and I did as coaches. You know, you build up, you play a game, you lose, your entire program is torn down, and you stink, and you can't
get out of bed.
That's it. And then you win, and you're like, hey, Mr. Happy, you're wearing a leisure suit, and you're dancing at the club. So, you know what I'm saying?
Were wearing a leisure suit. I never wore a leisure suit. Look good in a leisure suit.
I had light blue.
Oh, no.
With some high heels, white.
That's a bad look.
Yeah, that was really good. I mean, you know, Gretchen Wellman and Michelle Marich liked me back in the day. Roxanne Renner. Anyway. But, you know, at the end of the day, they'll be fine, too. I agree with your assessment. You said it, and you have said it. Injuries, we're going to make them play different. Killian Tilly, that whole, you know. But they'll be fine. They may not lose again. And not to change the subject, but it just came to my mind, the Nevada Wildcats or whatever the hell they're called.
Wolfpack, come on. Yes. A little love for the Must-Bus.
Still undefeated.
Still undefeated.
As you said they would.
Still in the Must-Bus. I am all in on the Must-Bus. Yes. I'll tell you what's amazing. You watch those. I watched a bunch of film on them this week. You watch those dudes play. I obviously have no life. But you watch those dudes play. They just play ball. I mean, they play with good spacing. They create matchups. They attack matchups. They are ridiculously aggressive. Jordan Caroline, their power forwards, can rebound the ball. He's going to initiate the fast break. That's just the way it is.
You saw it in the NBA. I mean, we saw it way back with Magic Johnson, right? But you see it in modern NBA with Draymond Green. And what an advantage that is, right?
Yeah, unbelievable.
Holy cow.
You're 5-on-4, 4-on-3 automatically because you just bust out past the first line of defense.
Quick. I mean, boom.
And whoever rebounds the ball, except for Brown, whoever rebounds the ball, it's just bam, bam. They're clearing the defense. It's an advanced pass. That guy's trying to get into the paint. Everyone's filling behind. There's no secondary. It is just playing. But then when they get into the half court, they run stuff. You know, they'll end up with Caleb and Cody Martin in a two-man game. They'll get the switch. They'll throw back. They'll have a little you know, false motion on the weak side, like a triple stagger, and Caleb Martin's just going to go right at your throat. And if you help, there's a guy stepping to the front of the rim, bop, all right, layup. Yeah. And they play behind, like they were behind in Arizona State. They were behind it at Grand Canyon. And they just keep balling. Like there's no panic. And I think that's – I got to give Eric Musselman a lot of credit because his NBA experience, he knows the way they play, there's going to be more possessions – excuse me, and they're going to just keep on playing. And if they continue to play and continue to be unselfish and don't panic and do the right thing, good things are going to happen. And that's exactly, as I watched the Grand Canyon game, they just kept on playing ball. And they just kept on bringing Thurman comes off. He makes a shot. And then Jazz Johnson comes in. He makes a couple of threes. And it's bam, 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 bam. And they win another game. And they're in position to, you know, maybe make a good run. Now, how about the blockbuster game this weekend? We got a sonic blockbuster. Kansas, Villanova. Everyone wants to know what's wrong with Villanova, right? I was in the studio the other day for the Villanova-Penn game. Penn was better. Penn's spacing, Penn's passing. Penn tested Villanova's defensive discipline and their defensive principles. And I'll tell you one thing. Villanova failed. All those screens and slips and handoffs and quick rolls. And Villanova looked like a young, inexperienced team that lost four guys to the NBA. And, like, everyone's panicking about Villanova. Everyone, first they thought they were panicked. Then they won a bunch of games in a row, beat Florida State. They were back. But they still have warts. They still have voids. They're going to be fine. But I'll tell you, getting fixed going into Kansas, probably not a good thing.
Seth, I listen to all of us, and we all say they're going to be fine. Yeah, and then we all say, well, they'll learn from this. I mean, yeah. I never go into that. I really don't. I go with the Lou Holtz model. The team you have today is not the team you had yesterday. It's not going to be the team you have tomorrow when you're dealing with college kids. And I'll tell you an example of it. I thought Villanova, I had text with Jay Wright earlier, and, you know, Jay was great. He's like, hey, maybe we need some humble pie, that kind of thing. Okay. Well, they played Temple, and I thought in the last 5 minutes of the Temple game, if you're ever going to look at a team and say, this team really grew up, it would be that game. I mean, I don't know if you're in studio or you got a chance to see it. They sat down, they locked in, they got on the offensive glass, which is a major strength for them this year at Villanova, and they did what they needed to do. Guys made shots. It looked like Villanova because guys stepped up. But the reason I don't believe that one game leads to the next is because Steve Donahue does a really good job with all the things. People forget that Steve Donahue took, Cornell to the Sweet 16 with Randy Whitman's son. Steve Donahue, you know, is no joke, and he's got a good team, and obviously he's got smart players. And I not to take anything away from them, Steve Donahue and Penn, I just thought that there was no carryover, in my opinion. You know what I mean? From the last, I don't know, 6 minutes, whatever you want to say, of the Temple game. There was no carryover in terms of, Seth, I'm locking your ass down.
Or throwing the ball to the right team. They started that game, they threw the ball away four of the first five possessions.
Well, I was going to say, I'm locking you down, I'm handling the basketball, and I'm getting good shots, is what I saw at the end of the at the end of the Temple game. It didn't matter who the good shot was from, right? It could get in the lane, you kick it out, whatever. I didn't see that in this game. I just didn't. And look, I don't want to make this all about Villanova because
Penn was very good.
Yes, and that's an unbelievably big win in the Big Five out there.
16 years.
Yeah.
16 years since that Penn's beaten Villanova.
Yeah. Crazy. So give them credit, you know. But, man, when you hear people say, hey, this is going to really carry over to the next game, I don't know about that one, man. I believe
right,
in Lou.
I'm going to give you one. How about Javon Quinterly supposedly had his Instagram account hacked, and there was a thing on his Instagram that said, you know, there's a reason that this place was my second choice. Now, he came out and said someone hacked my Instagram account, and he's changed his Instagram name. And it's important that Javon Quinterly was a five-star recruit. He actually went to Italy, not with my team. He was on the PATH team with Adidas. He's a nice little 6 foot two guard is really what he is. And it's taken him a transition. It's hard. People don't realize playing college basketball is hard. It's a big jump. Learning how to practice every single day, learning how to compete every play, learning how to play with others, learning what a good shot is and a bad shot is, learning how to be accountable for the other stuff away from basketball. And he's had a tough transition. I mean, it's just the way, and Jay Wright's not giving him anything because that's just the way they do things. You're going to earn what you get. But it's a good lesson, whether he got hacked or not, Like, here's the deal. College basketball's hard. All right. If you're not playing, the only reason you're not playing, for parents and for players is because you're not doing the things you need to do to play. Because if you were doing it, your coach would put you in the game. But, it's, you know, kind of, it's a good lesson. And, you know, I hope the kid's, you know, account did get hacked. But if it didn't, he took it down. And, you know, look, you got to be held accountable.
Just so people know, he's playing at Villanova. Yeah. He's not getting any run. And look, my account got hacked a lot. My account's always hacked. I don't know what the hell. I mean, everybody's account's hacked.
So that's why that crazy stuff.
Yeah. To me, all right, if you – and this is where I like – I don't mind kids transferring. I have no problem.
No, that's Quade Green's transferring. You know what? He needs a fresh start.
Yeah, he does. And that, but is that your guy from camp, Quade Green?
Love Quade Green. Love Quade. You know what? And look, Cal loves Quade Green. You know, it's going to help Kentucky, not because they're going to miss Quade shooting. Mm-hmm. It's going to help Kentucky because now all of a sudden now John's down to an 8-man rotation and he'll develop a better chemistry.
Yes,
and it'll help Quade because he get a fresh start. And you know what? He'll go to somewhere where they're going to need him more. And he can not look over his shoulder and be successful. He's a wonderful kid. And, you know, my biggest thing is I just hope he picks a school that makes sure he does the right thing in academically because you know, sometimes Quaddies get sideways with that. But you know, that'll be a win-win for both teams. And I know how much John really cares about him and likes him. And, I'm all for playing, role, opportunity, whatever – I'm all for transferring it if it doesn't work. I mean, find a situation. It doesn't, but you can't point fingers. You got to look in the mirror and then move on. I mean, that's my deal.
Back to the Villanova kid. You know, he's a kid that committed initially to where Arizona,
right?
Okay, and then it all came out.
Right.
Look, the one thing, and people always said this again. I always use Bob Knight because people say, "Well, you know what you signed up for." Look, you never really know what you signed up for, but the one thing you do know when you go to a Villanova. Is you're going to earn it, period. And if you don't like it, maybe you think you have earned it. That's the other thing. Like, the difference between a player's idea of I have earned it and a coach's idea of I have earned it are oftentimes not the same. And I get the inclination to, I'm not going to say the kid's making an excuse, but I get the inclination to lash out because, look.
Human nature.
Yeah, number one, it's human nature. But number two, you're the guy, and you've got guys, and they're like, hey, dude, you're not even playing in college, you know, and you've got to defend yourself. So I get it. In the other kid, Quade Green's case, Seth, I go back to this all the time, man. Coach K doesn't use 13 scholarships, and there's a reason. I mean, sometimes you whittle that thing down, as long as you're deep enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you need eight. I think eight's the perfect number and a couple practice players.
Yeah, but it can't be, hey, I got nine, and this is what happened to me. I got nine, but my best player wants to transfer and go to Ohio State. I mean, hey, that's not, you know, I still got eight, but I need the one, you know. But in Quade Green's case, to me, I good for him and really good for Kentucky. And, you know, the one thing I'll say about Cal and people that leave the program, Cal doesn't badmouth them. They don't badmouth him. Nope. They just be adults and they move on.
Yeah,
that's it.
No. And, you know, last thing, then we got to wrap this thing up. But, like, sure. Kansas, I was part of the other part of the blockbuster. No Udoka Azubuike. All right, so now the Dietrich Lawson, the end of the New Mexico State game was a joke. He scored the last 14 points.
Yeah, he did.
They've got to get a little bit better play. Now, LeGerald Vick, he got, if you don't know the story, he was late for shoot around against Wofford. Basically, he didn't do anything. He was 0 for life from the three-point line, played 21 minutes. In the next game, he didn't start again, and he struggled against New Mexico State. Prior to that, he was like 28 for 48 from the three-point line, was playing at a high level. And here's a perfect example. Like LeGerald Vick, you got everything going on. You came back. Bill Self let you come back because at one point you were out the door. Just be a human being and make the right decision. So you make the wrong decision. Now your game is in the crapper. All right. You're playing now without Udoka Azubuike. Without him, they don't shoot it as well because the defense is so concerned about giving weak side help on Azubuike. The ball swings and there's more step in threes. But like, Dietrich Lawson was unbelievable at the end of that game. They put him in high ball screens. He picked and popped, drove it, picked and popped, shot it. They ducked him in, threw it over the top. Whatever. I mean, he was terrific. But if Kansas is going to be successful, forget about Villanova in a big picture until Azubuike gets back. Like, LeGerald Vick, here's my public service announcement. Like, be a human being, all right, and do the right thing. It's not so hard. Show up to shoot around on time, all right? Be a good teammate. You're playing at a high level. Why would you put your coach and your team in that position? I'm done.
Nice, because coaches are never late.
No, hell no.
Coach Knight, we used to keep a track of him.
Would he be late?
Oh, my God.
How can you be late? I was always 10 minutes early, and I was anxious.
He used to say, for me, he used to say, all right, Chuck Franz, the year we won the Big Ten in 83, Chuck Franz, we had a running clock, a stopwatch. The meeting would be set at 6. I think Knight was over 20 hours late for the entire year. Like, there were days we sat there for 2 hours. Waiting
I know
on my
one
man.
Thing. I'm not Bobby Knight, but I don't think Bill Self was late, and I think that, obviously, this is an issue. All right. Hey, D-Squared, you know what?
Yes.
We're going to do a live read right now. Right,
oh,
now,
good.
All right. You got that stuff in front of you?
I could.
All right.
Yeah.
Guys,
sure.
66% of men lose their hair by age 35.
Not us.
We lost it earlier. That's a big problem. The thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, it's too late.
Oh,
it's easier to keep the hair you have than replace the hair you lost.
Hey, how will you feel a year from now? I lived this. If it's business as usual up there, why do guys sit back and watch their hairlines move backwards when they can turn to medicine and they can turn to science, Seth?
That's a good question.
Yes.
I should have asked myself that at an earlier age.
Me too.
Well, there's a solution, and it's forhims.com. A one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness for men.
Woohoo!
Thanks to science, baldness can be optional.
Hey, Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. No snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements, both of which I used. Prescription solutions that are backed by science, Seth Greenberg. We got science.
No doubt. No waiting room. No awkward in-person doctor visits. Save hours by going to 4hims.com. Just answer a few quick questions, and the doctor will review and can prescribe you. Products are shipped directly to your door.
All right, order now. Our listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or pharmacy. Go to Hims.com/courtside for 4HIMS.com/courtside. 4HIMS.com/courtside.
I'd like to welcome in Tennessee head coach Rick Barnes. Barnesy, how is life?
Hey, good. Well, you know how it is when you win games, but, you know, in our business, Seth, you know that it can be good one day, and the other day it's like, okay, what's happening today?
Yeah, it is, but I'll tell you what's happening today is, you know, and I always say this, I think the key for any coach is to recruit players that fit their personality, their system, and kind of what they want to do, have their DNA. And, you know, when you took over Tennessee, I got a kick out of people because a lot of people said, oh, Rick Barnes, he's just going there for a vacation. They don't know Rick Barnes. I mean, Rich yeah. Barnes is going there to build a program. And, you know, when you were starting back out at Tennessee, you know, they were wounded. There's no doubt about it. What was your main focus when you first got there?
Well, just what you said. I mean, I knew who my assistant coaches were going to be, and I believe today that with Rob Lanier and Mike Schwartz and Des Auber, I have certainly, I think, the best coaching staff. If not, it's one of the best. And those guys did exactly what you know we had to do. We had to get players that we knew that would fit our culture. And we wanted to do it the same way we've done it everywhere. We wanted to build the foundation through a group of guys that were going to buy into tough, hard-nosed, big-boy kind of basketball, and guys that were willing to get into the gym above and beyond what we did with them, and guys that were just really committed to it. And you go back and look at where we started 4 years ago, Admiral Schofield, Lamonte Turner, Kyle Alexander and two walk-ons, Brad Woodson and Lucas Campbell, were guys that came in here, and we said, these are the guys, we've got to teach them how to do this, because there wasn't a lot of guys in the program other than Kevin Punter who really bought into us, because they had gone through like three coaches in a four-year period, and they didn't know where they were going or coming. But the fact is that this senior group are the guys that really said, okay. And as coaches, you know, if you don't have players leading it, as coaches, you got to do that. And now, though, these guys are leading. So when Grant Williams came in, he had an Admiral Schofield and a Kyle Alexander showing him, this is how we do it. And each year we've been able to build on that.
You know, I talked to Mark Few the other day, and he said, you know, you can talk about Tennessee's toughness, but quite honestly, he said, that game started, and you can't simulate that in your practice. And they just punched us right between the nose. I mean, we didn't even know what hit us. And that's obviously the kind of what your teams have always been like, whether it's been in Providence, whether it's been at Clemson, whether, you know, even at Texas. And how do you get in today's day and age, you coach your guys hard, but yet they play for you. How is that fine balance? I know part of it is you don't have an office anymore. You live in the gym. But, you know, what enables you to do that?
You know what, Seth, I think what you said about being in the gym with them, and I tell them, we tell them when we go through the whole process, we want it to be very transparent. We want to ask them what they want. And from the very beginning, and you know this better than anyone, everybody will tell you when you start recruiting, they want to play in the NBA. And we say, hey, if that's what you want to do, you're going to have to figure out a way to separate yourself from a lot of people if you want to really make it. And what we're going to do, we don't have any magic dust we can sprinkle on you, because what I do think you have to do initially is teach them what a work ethic is. They all think they work hard, but if they're really talking about being one of the elite players, they have to understand there's a whole number of levels you got to get to, both mentally and physically, to get there. And so I think to do that, it's up to us to show them that, but it's also you got to be there with them in other areas where you talk to them. Like, I mean, there's days when I might get on a Jordan Bone and Rob Lanier might say, coach, you need to give, you know, Jordan a little bit of love. And I'll sit down and I'll talk to him and I'll say, look, man, this is why I'm doing it. But you need to understand I'm not going to back off, because I'm doing what I think's best for you. And I do want you to know this. I'm going to go at it.
Yeah, you talk about going at it. I was at your practice this fall, and, you know, Grant, who plays his tail off, but he was kind of doing some things that basically weren't weren't important into winning. You know, he was loose with the ball. Uh-huh. He took some shots that, you know, without moving the ball, he wasn't playing to his strengths. And that's hard, because you got the SEC Player of the Year, and everyone's telling him you got to show people you got to do this, you got to do that, but he's also got to stay true to who he is. And he was on those ropes, man. My arms hurt watching him do those ropes. I thought I grew some abs while he was doing those ropes.
Yeah.
I mean, but yet he went right at it, and bam, he understood where you were coming from.
Yeah, I think you're right, Seth, in the fact that he is hearing that noise on the outside that, hey, he's got to be able to do this, he's got to be able to do that, and all this and all that. And again, I want to see him improve. Like in the off season, you'd be amazed the stuff that we do with these guys, because I don't want to put them in a box. You know, I want guys to want to get better in everything that they do. But what happens through that process sometimes, they get away from what really makes them good. And, you know, like I told him, I don't care what he does in terms of showing people he can shoot a three-point shot. I don't care what he does in terms of scoring 20 points a game. He's going to be judged on how well he rebounds the ball at his height and how well he defends the ball, or defends in general. And but because, you know, Grant can really score around the basket. He really can. And he can shoot the ball. He's gotten better at his, you know, knowing when to shoot one and when not to from the perimeter, which, you know, I want him to do that because I know he puts time into doing it. But he's got to know which side of the toast is buttered on.
Yeah, it's interesting because he shoots 40% from three. But the most impressive thing to me, you know, look, we know he rebounds the ball right now better than he has. I think he's plus three or four. And we know around the basket, he gets angles, but the guy's averaging 4.5 assists a game. His passing from the high post when you post up Schofield or Alexander is absolutely incredible. And that's an area he did not have in his game last year, right?
Right. And when you really sit and talk to him, he likes doing that. You know, like you go back to the game against Kansas, you know, he tried to make a really difficult pass in a crucial time at the end to Kyle Alexander, where that's where he needed to go score. And he saw it on tape, and you know, he got himself in a put himself in a tough position. But even if Kyle would have caught that pass, he was in even a tougher position. But he does. He's worked at that. And when you were here, you know, he was trying to do too much. And so there's a fine line there between doing that and overdoing it and knowing who you're throwing it to. Can they catch that pass or can they not? And he'll continue to get better there. But he does like handling the ball, and he's very unselfish. When we give it to him on the blocks, if you come double team, he's gonna really try to make the right pass read out of there.
We're going to welcome in Dan Dockich here because Dan Dockich was caught in a little bit of a traffic jam. But it doesn't get any better because Dockich is one of the world's greatest interviewers in the history of life on the world's greatest podcast.
All
so
right.
D squared, what do you got for Barnsey?
Hey, you had a player say, I just want to be coach's favorite all-time player. That's a hell of a thing, Coach. I've never heard a player say that. That was pretty cool after the Gonzaga win.
It really was. And you know what? And somebody asked me the other day, what would be a coach's all-time favorite player? I said, I think when coaches talk about players, I don't know if you'd ever have just one all-time favorite player, but I can tell you this. When you put together that list, it's going to be guys that, one, that work really hard every single day. They have great passion. They embrace it in practice. They want to get better, and they want to continue to be coached from day one. And Admiral Schofield is one of those guys. I've watched him. When he made that shot the other day, that is really what went through my mind, how many hours I have sat in this gym and watched him shoot, run, do this, do that. And I think and you guys know, you coach, it's when those guys totally buy in. They want to be the best they can be. They want to help the team be the best they can be. And they're willing to do it every single day.
Coach, isn't it amazing how guys that put that kind of time in, the ball seems to find them in the right time at the right spot, and he delivers more times than not. Isn't it amazing how one follows the other?
Well, it really is. And what's ironic about the game against Gonzaga, when Grant went out, we had a little play we called fly four, where we basically get the four on the run. And remember, he came around and pulled up and shot a little 15-foot jump shot. We called the exact same play, and everybody knew we were running except Admiral. So he ended up fumbling the ball and stepped back, and that's when he banked a three. So sometimes it just works out. And then the last one, we ran that little high ball screen saying, hey, you make the play, whether you want to shoot the three or play off the bounce, whatever it is. But I think all that goes back to just what you said. You know, the more time you put into it, it just things can turn your way. And he actually made the shot. People forget that a year ago when we beat Georgia in our building to win a share of the SEC championship, Grant Williams had fouled out. And we went through Admiral there. He made a big time play off the post, and Kyle Alexander made a great defensive play, but we had been in that situation before, and he's done some of that.
Barnes, the two guys that don't get as much hype, but I think are playing really well for you, Jordan Bone. When I watched him at practice that day, he practiced so hard and was so committed defensively every single possession. And Kyle Alexander, who I always thought if he could take that next step and be consistent, that's kind of the missing piece to maybe winning a national championship. Those two guys seem like each and every day they do something a little bit better. What's it like coaching those two?
Well, and you're absolutely right about those two guys. You know, Kyle's already graduated, and, you know, he right now, I can't imagine anyone putting any more time in him because he's in grad school, and most of that is online for him. So he's in the gym every morning. He's in here at 10 o'clock, and he goes really hard for a good hour on his own, doing a lot of different things that he's been doing here. But his consistency, and you go back to the game Saturday, he only played 20 minutes, and he was a plus 16 with efficiency rating, and we need him in the game. And Jordan Bone is as quick and as fast as anybody in the country, and I think he continues to understand the flow, understanding how to keep his teammates involved, and also understanding when he really needs to be more aggressive with the ball himself in terms of taking the shots, because he can. He got down on himself a little bit against Gonzaga, but he came back and he made a great play off that last play. He drug those two guys down to the elbow and gave Adam a lot of room to work with. But Saturday, Seth, I thought Jordan Bowden had really bounced back for us.
Yeah.
He had been really struggling. We took him out of the lineup. And when he got aggressive for us, when he just started taking shots, which he's not always done that for us, and when he did that, you could almost feel like at some point in time we're going to break a few loose here and it's going to get going. And he had a lot to do with that game Saturday against Gonzaga.
Coach, I always say, people always ask me, being with Coach Knight for – as long as I was, what was the best thing that he did? And I always said this. I said, you know, preparation was great and all that kind of stuff, but, man, keeping you grounded after a big win was as big a thing as he did. I'm guessing that's not an issue with your team because it's a veteran team, but do you have to look at that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, well, I believe in being brutally honest, and we found enough wrong in the game against Gonzaga. You know what? We've had an issue all year being really solid on with transition defense. We really have, but we had our two best transition defensive plays against Gonzaga the other day. I mean, it was textbook in the way we got back and got touched up and matched up and played, and we've had some trouble with that. But I think every game you come back and you scrub it out, you show the things. And we've got to get better. Our ball screen defense has got to get better. You know, we got to get better with playing with bigger hands. We've got to get back to deflecting the ball the way we were at the end of last year. And rebounding is always something that we work on every single day. But, yeah, I think that's really important. But I think you're right, too, in the fact that we came in the other day. We came in Sunday and scrubbed it out and went through it. And then Monday, we were off getting ready for exams. And our Tuesday practice was as good a practice as we've had since I've been here. And it was all because of the mindset those guys came in with. And what you hope they're thinking is, this is pretty good, but if you want to be one of the best teams in the country, you got to wear that badge with honor. And you got to know that everybody you're playing now is going to get up for you the way you did against Kansas, the way you did against Gonzaga, and you got to expect it. But I also know this from my time, particularly at Texas, when we had those teams that were consistently up there ranked, it makes you better if you embrace it. But if you don't embrace it in practice, you're not going to be there very long. And because there's no magic dust we're going to sprinkle on these guys, you know, during a game. It's what we do with our preparation. And I know they hear stuff, and which is neat. You know, I mean, you know, you like it when people are talking about your program. Like when they got back the other night, there were a bunch of students waiting on them at their dorm, but those guys left, and I think they went to the Waffle House or Huddle House and celebrated. But you're right. These older guys now should be. Like, if you go back to the Kansas game, throughout the middle of the game, we'd make a couple big shots. We were jumping around like we thought we had won the game. I mean, I'm talking with 10 minutes to go in the game. You go back the other day when Admiral made both of those threes, or we made shots, there was no jumping around. And when the bench came running out to meet those guys, once we had got that stop, Powell, I think, got the rebound, was getting ready to shoot the free throw. Admiral was once ahead, calm down. We still got, you know, some game to play here. And that's where I think we are seeing guys grow up some.
Yeah, because you're a red-letter game for people. Like, you're going to a game this weekend. Memphis right now playing Tennessee, where you are in your program, you know, that's a red-letter game for them. And look, they're going to come down and fire threes and play fast. And that little guy, Harris, he's got about as green a light as I've ever seen any player have. I mean, that's going to be – sorry, Dan, I know you love this, but that's going to end up being a rock fight just because
– Rock fight!
he's out of control. I mean, But I mean, that game will be a game that's a big game. Will you stop on their schedule? I mean, and do your guys understand that?
Yeah, I think they do. I do. I know that, you know, that's going to be a very emotional crowd there because, you know, this back when I first got here and Tubby Smith got to Memphis, we started talking about it because, you know, Memphis is one of those great basketball cities and towns that really love basketball. And it is in the state of Tennessee. And you know, we as a University of Tennessee, we've got to recruit this state. But we talked about putting this game on, and it took us a little time because of where the scheduling had already been put in place before we both got here. And so the way the contract reads is we play there. They come here next year, and then we go to Nashville. My initial thought was I wanted that game to be in Nashville because I think we all need to have a presence in Nashville. It's right in the middle of the state. But that's the way this contract plays, and after 3 years, we'll see where it goes. But I was asked this morning by the local media, do your guys understand this rivalry? Do they? I don't think they can. They've never been a part of it. And but they know that it's sold out, 18,000 people sold out, and it's going to be a game. And I think if they don't understand, every game is going to be a rock fight.
Rock fight!
We're not
just ignore him. Just ignore him. This, I mean, Barnes, these are the things I have to deal with. I mean, just ignore him. It's very difficult. Rock fight. Hey, you know what the funny thing is? He makes fun of it, but I heard him the other day.
I use it all the time.
He's out of control. Josiah James, how good is he? You guys got him signed. You beat Duke for a player.
We're really excited. You know what? He's really I mean, he's the whole thing, Seth. I mean, we love him, and he fits in perfectly with what we want to do here. And I think, really, he's one of the most underrated big-time players I've ever been around, you know, with a guy coming in. But he's a worker now. That's what I love about him. And he's very humble. And I think that I got to give Grant Williams and our players a lot of credit for their recruiting of him because he spent some time up here a number of different times and got to know what we're about. And like I said, we're very transparent. And I think he's going to be a great, great player for a long time in this game. He's because of how hard he works at it. And he's certainly he is a 6'7" point guard. I mean, and I'm telling you, he is a point guard, regardless of what people might think. I think when he's gone to USA Basketball, those type of things, because he's so big and strong, they haven't always let him play that position solely. But I am telling you, he is a point guard.
And you beat Duke for him. I was on the phone with another coach who lost Vernon Carey the other day, and he said, like, should I just stop recruiting against Duke? I mean, am I just hit my head against the wall? This is ridiculous. I mean, beating Duke for a player is, like, you should get, like, a gold star. Yeah, really, a real rock fight.
Well, you know what's really interesting? We started this recruiting process, and, you know, all my coaches are involved with all of our recruits, but as you know, there's point guys on each one of these guys that recruited, and Mike Schwartz was the point guy on Josiah James, and we were the first school to offer Josiah James a scholarship, and that's a fact. And so as we got into it, and, you know, he wasn't always on the big circuit with the shoe companies. He played because he's a very loyal person, and he played with his team and throughout the whole thing, so as it got, time started going on, you know, Michigan State was involved. Clemson did a great job recruiting Josiah. North Carolina came in, and they had offered him there at the end, and Duke was in it. But here's what I said to Mike. I said, Mike, here's what I want to know about this kid. When the Dukes, the North Carolinas, the Kentuckys, they come calling, can he tell them no after we've spent 2.5-3 years? And he looked at me, and he said, Coach, I tell you, this is one kid that I will promise you could tell those schools no. And you know what? He did. He really did. And because I don't know how you can recruit anyone any harder than we did Josiah. I don't know how you can. But the fact is, he remembered. It reminded me of? Kevin Durant. When I was at Texas, Russ Springman was the first guy to offer Kevin Durant a scholarship at about the same time. And Kevin always talked about that. He said, you know, I remember my first real big offer was from Texas. And I think Josiah would say that we were one of the first. I do think we were the first to offer him the scholarship, you know, from a Power 5 league.
That's awesome. That's awesome stuff. Well, Barnesy, good luck this week. Good luck in league. The league is absolutely terrific, and it is fun. I don't know, Dan, would you agree? His team is just fun to watch.
I love it. I've said this numerous times on every broadcast when we get talking a coach. Purdue prides itself, and I'm going back a year now, prides itself on being tough and all that kind of stuff, particularly with Haas and those guys last year. And when I talked to Matt Painter after playing you guys in the Bahamas, it was like, hey, Dan, Grant Williams just physically intimidated all of us. And so, you know, following your team because of a number of things. Number one, your story, which I think is absolutely great. And your team's toughness and the success has just been fantastic. And wish you the best of luck, Coach, and thank you for coming on.
Well, let me hear it one more time, that rock fight. Let me hear it.
Rock fight!
There we go.
Rock fight, all Memphis! Right. See you, Coach.
All right.
Later, Barnes.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Rock fight. You and me.
You're unbelievable.
I do use it all the time because I like it. Hey, rock fight.
When you say it, I'm literally the other day, I was laying on the couch and I was eating something. I almost choked to death because I started laughing so
hard. It's
totally
about you, too, because I always change my voice to you.
I mean, it was just, I'm serious. I just busted out. I like choke. What is so funny? I said, you wouldn't understand.
No.
You wouldn't understand.
You wouldn't get it. Don't worry about it.
Unbelievable. Joshy.
Seth, it's good to be back, man.
I hear you.
We missed
you. One thing. We missed
you. You didn't really miss me that much.
Yeah, we did. But you know what? you know, it's that time. Let's pick some games.
Yeah, let's pick some games, fellas. We talked a little bit about it earlier. Of course, Villanova versus Kansas. As you mentioned, it's part of that Sonic blockbuster. Saturday, noon Eastern, ESPN. What do you guys think?
I mean, the fog, right? It is in the fog.
Yes. Beware.
I got to go. I mean, I think Kansas by double digits. Look, but I do expect Villanova to play well. You know, I always say the NBA, the average margin of victory is like 9 or 6 or whatever it is. You know, it gets to 20, then it gets back and whatever. I think that's going to be the kind of game. But I think eventually, Kansas wins big. 12-15, something like that.
I'm going to go Kansas. I don't think a matchup to watch, obviously, Lawson and Pascal or Demir Crosby-Roundtree. That matchup will be interesting. And then defensive transition. Villanova, you can't turn the ball over.
No.
And your losses, you turn it over 17 times a game. That will not work at the fog.
No, it won't. No, it won't. How about the next one, guys? Tennessee, we just talked with Rick Barnes, going to Memphis, as you mentioned to him. Saturday, also noon Eastern. This one, though, on ESPN2.
What's that game going to be?
Where?
What? What is it going to be? Come on. I mean,
a rock fight. No, it's not. It's going to be a rout. Crazy shots by Memphis are going to come back to haunt them against discipline. I'm not saying rock fight in this one.
No rock fight. So you're going Tennessee all the way.
I'm going
the road,
Tennessee.
Tennessee has the toughness to play in that environment. And Tennessee obviously has the physicality. Tennessee can really guard the ball. Tennessee all the way.
What about this one, guys? This one might be a rock fight. Gonzaga coming east. Going to the Dean Dome.
First time ever, by the way.
Yeah.
Mark Few's first time ever in the Dean Dome. How's that one for you?
At North Carolina, Nugget. 7 o'clock ESPN2.
Not a rock fight either.
Nugget. That's going to be 106 to 104. I mean, the first one to 110 could win this one. I'm looking forward to that game. I think, who's doing that game? You doing that game, Seth?
No.
That's going to be
Dickie V.
Oh, Dickie V's on the call. That's going to be a very fun, high-paced, high-scoring game. I'm going to say, look, everybody healthy, I might take the Zags, but I don't think you go into the Dean Dome and, you know, get it done. I just don't. I think that Carolina eventually is going to get good.
I agree. I think Carolina, I think it'll be interesting. You can't simulate Tennessee's toughness. I think the first few minutes, I'm not sure that Gonzaga, because they really can't practice, can simulate the speed in which Carolina comes at you. I wouldn't be surprised to see if Roy Williams goes a little bit small. And I think they're going to have a healthy Kobe White back. He was out last time. Carolina at home in that environment. I don't care who you are, Gonzaga. That's a unique environment to walk into the first time. As good as I think Gonzaga is, and I think their Final Four good, I think Carolina wins at home.
Good weekend of games, though, huh?
No doubt about
hey,
it.
Hey, Seth, last thing. I'm going to ask you this every week, all right?
Every week.
Two questions. Big 12, Kansas or the field?
Ooh, you know what? Now, with Doak out, depending on if he gets back, I'm right now leaning, once again, you're going to think it's just shocking. Mm-hmm. I'm right now, today, because Doak is out, because he's out, I'm going with the field. LeGerald Vick in the doghouse. Mm-hmm. They're not shooting very well from the three.
Mm-hmm.
Too much pressure on Dedrick Lawson, who is basically their lone low-post guy right mm-hmm. now. I've got the field.
Okay, next question. Okay, Dan.
You're just setting me up, aren't you?
No, not at all. I'm going to ask you this every week. Nevada, undefeated.
Undefeated.
When we hit tourney time. Done.
Done.
Mark Few right about NCAA should hustle up here.
100%.
He really?
I'm yeah, shocked they, you say that. 100% they should hustle. Wait a second. Here, you know, Mark Few, I talked to him this week. This is a great thing. This is what the NCAA should do. And these are not my words. These are Mark's words. Go to the schools whose names have been mentioned with buying players. All right, so here's the deal. Either you're going to be ineligible to play if you want to have your current coaching staff and coach right now. All right, that's fine. And at the end of this investigation, if it's found that those coaches are guilty of whatever, all right, and it's a major violation, then your school is going to be on 5 years probation, and that coach will have a 5-year show cause. Or, you know what? Be proactive and say that, you know what, right now we're going to eliminate ourselves from the NCAA tournament, and we're going to suspend our coach until we find out what is going on in the investigation from the FBI and everything else. And then at worst case scenario, we're only going to basically be on a 1-year self-imposed probation. Now that's Mark Few's formula to the NCAA. What's your take on that?
I think it's a great – see, what I like about that, Seth, is there are definite guidelines. Does that make sense? Like, there's a 5 years here, 5 years that. I like that there is absolute definite guidelines. Boom.
Yeah, I mean, you got a choice as an institution. Either, right, all right, we're not going to be eligible for NCAA tournament play. We're going to suspend our coach right in this moment in time. That's what it is. Or, you know what, we're going to roll the dice. We're going to stick by our coach. But if he's found guilty of these major violations, then he will have a 5-year show cause and the institution will have a 5-year ban from the NCAA. That's an interesting take. I haven't heard a take like that, but
no.
I thought that was an interesting take.
I think it's a very interesting take, and I think that that's something that just in a minute, why do you think they're not doing something like that?
I think they're worried about being sued until all the information comes out.
Stuff comes out in a court of law. I mean, what the hell else you need?
Yeah, but it hasn't been proven. Like, some of those accusations have not been proven. They've came out, and remember, the judge would not allow them into testimony because it didn't involve that particular case. I think that's the concern. But you know the one thing?
Yo.
This was a great courtside. And if you like our courtside, please download us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you might download your podcast. And make sure you rate us. And obviously, if you rate us, it's going to be magnificent. The highest rating humanly possible, because you can't be the world's greatest podcast without having the highest rated podcast in the history of life. And after you listen to our podcast, of course, you've got to listen to Dan and Coach Ross's podcast, which is called...
It is called Dan Explain Yourself. This week it'll be Jason Benetti talking about all the things that Jason Benetti talks about.
That doesn't get any better. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. And you know what we're going to talk about next week? Talk about the hardest time in the year for a college basketball player, the time after finals, before the second semester. We'll talk about that next week.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.